Support comes from Gemma, architects, planners, and designers seeking to bring joy to their clients and communities. Details at gemastl.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. As a transplant to St. Louis, I lived here for a number of years before I learned that visiting Branson, Missouri is a tradition for many who've grown up in this part of the Midwest. At just under a four-hour drive from St. Louis in southwest Missouri, Branson's far enough away for a short vacation, but close enough that families can visit every year, or on a whim. And while there's no one way to perfectly describe Branson's entertainment, which is also the home of Silver Dollar City, it is unmistakably built around being family-friendly, old-school variety, wholesome nostalgia, and patriotic. Take, for example, Dolly Parton's Stampede.
A dazzling state-of-the-art theatrical experience brings to life a live action trip into America's past. The fabulous four-course feast. New sights, new sounds. The biggest changes in Dolly Parton's Stampede history. This is the real deal.
Comedian Yakov Smirnoff.
Men assume that the point of the conversation is to find the problem and solve it. But for women, the point of the conversation is the conversation. It's hard for men to relate to this because, I mean, a lot of times men think, I wish women would come with instructions. But do you know any man who ever read instructions?
And there's the long-running show, Presley's Country Jubilee.
Well, it's your life. You say you want to change. Down all the dreams we've watched come true mean anything.
Joanna D. Das is the author of the new book, Faith, Family, and Flag, Branson Entertainment and the Idea of America. She's also a WashU professor of performing arts and a Missouri native. Joanna, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you so much for having me.
So listening to all of that, there's some recognition, right?
Yes, I've been to all of those shows, some of them multiple times.
Mm-hmm. What was your first experience of Branson like, Joanna?
Well, I knew about Branson growing up because I grew up in St. Louis. And when I was a dance student at COCA, several of my teachers had performed in Branson. So I was always very familiar. But the first time I went was around 2006. And I went to Dolly Parton's Dixie Stampede. At that time, it was called the Dixie Stampede, and the Shoji Tabuchi show. And my experience was one of kind of overwhelming spectacle. Also some bewilderment about how some of the political functions of Branson Entertainment. But I left it behind for about 10 years and then came back to thinking about writing about Branson around 2016.
Mm-hmm. So there is a long gestation kind mm-hmm. of period.
Mm-hmm.
Did you go into that first experience of Branson with any expectations? And then, you know, is what you experienced in alignment with maybe what you had heard?
Yes and no. I would say, you know, Branson Entertainment was definitely, as I said, spectacular and very patriotic and very fun for whole families. But it also, I was thinking to myself, oh, I'd heard it was very politically conservative. Some of the messages didn't seem so overt. And so I thought, well, maybe this isn't doing that much political work. But then when I revisited Branson and to do this research, I really kind of dug into what kind of value systems are Branson shows promoting and how is that contributing to our current political and culture.
Mm-hmm. I did put out a question on Facebook as well as here at the station with my colleagues on Slack. One of the things that I heard from our newscast editor, who's in Rolla, Jonathan All, he said, I made my first trip to Branson earlier this year. My family had a good time. If you lean into how cheesy it is, it can be fun. I will say the most prescient thing ever said about Branson came from an episode of The Simpsons. Branson is like Las Vegas if it were run by Ned Flanders. So is that an apt comparison there?
Yes and no. I do think it does emphasize family-friendly, wholesome fun. There's also an element in parts of Branson that it leans more in a Christian nationalist direction that not everybody would find welcoming.
Yeah. We also heard from Deb DePew in Sullivan, who wrote, I first visited Branson in 1990 with my besties, went on a Friday night at 7 p.m., and the only place to dine was Pizza Hut. We loved the craft stores, outlet malls, and Silver Dollar City, but did not go to any shows except Shoji Tobuchi. But then the Rockettes did their Christmas show at the Grand Palace, and I, having growing up in North Jersey, was hooked. We subsequently bought a condo. My in-laws spent the spring fishing Table Rock Lake. My family and friends visited from NYC. Yes, there's a schlock and camp and country buffets and traffic, but now there's fine dining and Big Cedar Lodge. And every time I visit, I smile and return home happy. We also want to hear from more of you. What comes most immediately to mind about Branson, whether you've been once or many times? If you've never visited, what stands out about what you've heard about it? Give us a call at 314-382-8255. That's 314-382-TALK. You can also send us an email at talk@stlpr.org. So, Joanna, you had described your experiences there, ideas for writing about it. Branson did not become this juggernaut of an entertainment center overnight. And I believe when we were talking, you described about 20 years ago when you first were kind of thinking about Branson and what it means. Talk with us about that, what you were reading and...
Sure. So I was in graduate school at NYU at that time, and it was in the wake of the 2004 presidential election, and Democrats were feeling lost in the wilderness. They'd lost not only the presidency, but also the House and the Senate. And this very best-selling popular book came out by Thomas Frank called What's the Matter with Kansas? And his basic argument was that Republicans had won over the quote-unquote heart of America, by which he meant kind of white, middle and working class Americans, by persuading them to vote with their cultural interests, but against their economic and social interests. And what popped into my head at that moment was, he's wrong. If he would visit Branson, he would see how these strands of culture, economics, and social values all weave together. And in Branson, that woven thread is represented by kind of the three primary values of faith, family, and flag. And so it's a coherent message. It's not one of contradiction, necessarily.
There's the inspiration for something, and then there's the impetus to do something. And with regard to the latter, what is it that ultimately motivated you to write a whole book about Branson as an entertainment center?
So that happened after the 2016 election, and many of the same questions and rhetoric came up. And I also felt that the national media landscape had really ignored Branson and the academic field of performing arts, music, dance, theater, had also ignored Branson or mocked it, right? Those were kind of the two responses, both in academia and kind of in the national media. And I felt yet again that Branson was a very important place for live performance in America, and one that could tell us a lot about this idea of the American dream, what kind of values America represents, and the battle over those values. And so I felt that Branson was really important to write about.
And the mocking part, why do people mock Branson? And I ask this as someone who didn't grow up here. Mm-hmm. And in my conversations with a lot of people who are transplants, they didn't know about Branson before moving to St. Louis.
Yeah, so Branson keeps alive a vibrant tradition of variety entertainment, which has historically in the United States signaled lowbrow, right? Lowbrow entertainment. And in the 20th century, a lot of American cultural critics consolidated around the idea that, you know, listening to a whole opera or a whole symphony or, you know, a three-hour play, that's what was highbrow, right? And the kind of variety entertainment that also kind of drew on other people's songs, right? In Branson, most of the songs are covers, like when people sing, and the jokes are very kind of corny, people think. So that's kind of signals this lowbrow entertainment that becomes very easy to mock. There's also, you know, the kind of classic comedic figure of Branson entertainment historically has been the hillbilly, which some people argue has been the last kind of person or trope you can laugh at in America, right? A rural, poor rural white person. And so Branson has been subject to kind of mockery for those reasons, for kind of continuing this lowbrow variety entertainment, when really to me it's a vibrant part of the American popular tradition and is worthy of study and respect.
We have Kathy, who's calling from Olivet. Kathy, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Hi.
Hi. Please share either your question or your reflection.
Yeah, I'd just like to add, we went to Branson on a whim last Thanksgiving, almost a year ago now. I mean, almost kind of like a joke, you know, to see like if it really was, you know, like as you said, lowbrow or anything like that. And it was great. Our kids are 6 and 9, and they absolutely loved it. We went to Silver Dollar City. We enjoyed cruising up and down like the main strip where they have the very, very unique entertainment options for kids, unique water parks, unique museums. They've got the upside down house, as the kids call it, Wonderworks. And it was just amazing. I mean, it just left us smiling. And, you know, we went back this summer and the kids are asking if we're going to go again this Thanksgiving. I'm like, no, we've got other plans this year. But it was awesome. I highly recommend it.
Kathy, when you came back, did you talk with folks about what you experienced there? And did you go in maybe thinking that, as you said, you went on a whim and kind of as a joke? How did that maybe come up in conversations afterward?
Yeah, we told our neighbors and friends that we were going, and they're kind of like, oh, really? Like, how was it? That seems like, you know, maybe a little bit like unlike something your family would do. And we just had like very sincere, earnest praise for it, I guess. I mean, yes, there was a bit of like a Christian nationalist element that we did notice. But that was kind of like in the background. And, you know, overarching and everything was just like the very intense sense of family and community and just like, you know, I guess love and friendship. Not to sound corny.
No,
that's exactly what Branson does promote. And many people there are just very genuine in that being kind of Branson's brand, right? One of hospitality, family friendliness, building community in the theater, all the things, you know, that people in the theater want to do in general, right, across the country.
We're going to take a very quick break here, but we'll be back shortly to continue this conversation about Branson with author and WashU performing arts professor Joanna D. Das. We also want to hear from you. What comes most immediately to mind about Branson, whether you've been once or maybe many times? Give us a call at 314-382-8255. That's 314-382-TALK. You can also send us an email at talk@stlpr.org. We'll be right back. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. Welcome back. Let's return to our conversation about Branson, Missouri, how it became America's conservative entertainment capital, and its significance in the history and culture of performing arts in the U.S. The new book, Family, Faith, and Flag, Faith, Family, and Flag, explores that, and we're speaking with its author, Joanna D. Das. Before the break, we had a caller mention Christian nationalist vibes. Nick, this is a great place to have you read an excerpt from your book. And this kind of sets up a contrast. It's a comparison of two people and the different ways that they went when it came to faith and flag in particular.
Great. At the start of World War II, two paths diverged in an Arizona desert. One man enlisted in the Air Force, became a U.S. senator, and ran for president in 1964. The other descended into alcoholism, joined the circus, and ended up in Branson. One has secured a place in history, the other is largely unknown. But for 5 years prior to that fateful bombing of Pearl Harbor, Barry Goldwater and Lloyd Heller forged a friendship based on their shared passion for the peculiar practice of Native American impersonation. And in the end, each contributed to the warp and woof of modern conservatism in America. Goldwater gave the movement some of its core political principles, initially considered too extreme, but eventually central. Heller gave life to these principles on the stage. In Branson, he popularized glorious pioneer pasts in order to paint powerful visions of the nation's present and future.
And that is from Chapter 2 of The Folk and the Frontier, Performing America's Past. And we've heard Joanna D. Das, who's the author of that passage, read it for us. This comparison or this relationship, when did you come upon this? Did you already know about it, or did it come through the research that you did?
It came through the research. I had no idea that Lloyd Heller, who was a central figure in establishing the outdoor drama Shepherd of the Hills and the theme park Silver Dollar City, I had no idea that he and Barry Goldwater were best friends. For 5 years, they worked super closely together. So it came up happenstance in an interview I did with the current director of Shepherd of the Hills. And then I found kind of an old biography of Lloyd Heller from the 1980s, in which it described their friendship and their shared affiliation with this group called the Smoke Eye, which is a Native American impersonation group, but it's kind of a fraternal organization like the Masons. Members were so dedicated, they had tattoos, matching tattoos on their left hands. So if you look up close at pictures of Barry Goldwater, who was defeated in a landslide to Lyndon B. Johnson, but you can see the dots of his tattoos on his hand.
Wow. We have Jonathan, who is calling from St. Louis. Jonathan, go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to share that as my first experience living in Missouri, I performed with Indiana's brass theater group at the Grand Palace Theater back in 1997.
Oh, great.
What was that? Go ahead.
I was just going to say we performed opposite. Your guest was saying how varied the entertainment was. And so at this one theater, we performed opposite Ronnie Millsap and Eric Estrada was hosting the Wheel of Fortune.
Oh, my goodness. So you were nodding, Joanna, as he was sharing that story. We also have Brian, who is calling from Pacific. Brian, welcome to the show.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for having me on. I wanted to mention, I know there's a lot of family talk about Branson, but my wife and I are young, married millennials, and we have no kids, and we still love to go to Branson. Because honestly, the proximity and also the price, you know, you can go to Las Vegas and see all kinds of shows and spend thousands of dollars. We go down to Branson and spend a couple hundred bucks and have a fantastic time.
Mm-hmm. And is going to performances part of what you and your wife do?
You know, we do sometimes. We try to mix it up a little bit, but we always do something unique, whether it's like an attraction or Silver Dollar City or the arcades. Branson has amazing arcades for anybody who's an arcade lover.
Oh, it's like games then?
Yes, absolutely. I mean,
okay.
I know that's that's kind of more the family aspect of it. But I mean, there's just such a variety, and it still has that Missouri kind of, you know, lower cost. You go out to dinner, you're not spending an arm and a leg, but you're having a great time, and it looks so cool, and it's a great time overall.
Mm-hmm. Brian, thank you. Joanna, what Brian has shared about the affordability, about proximity, it was also, I mean, so much money has been made in Branson, and this is made by people who live there. What did you learn about the families who have made Branson what it is today?
Yeah, they kind of lived the American dream. They built their own businesses. All members of the family pitched in those early years to the earliest families, the Presleys, the Mabes, you know, husbands, wives, children, aunts, uncles, everyone was doing a job to help kind of keep the theater going. And affordability is one of the family-friendly aspects of Branson. I'm glad the caller mentioned that. You know, if you wanted to go see a country music show, let's say even in the 1970s, in Branson, you could go see a country music performance that also included comedy. It had this variety aspect. Children were welcome. They got discount prices. And you would get to hear all of your favorite hits because the performers, as I said, they play covers. They would sing all of the latest hits. You know, going to see Waylon Jennings in St. Louis, I did a comparison in the book, cost at least twice as much. You'd have to hire a babysitter. You'd only get his songs. Maybe he wouldn't play all of his hits, right? So the affordability and variety are very attractive things, and including children, right?
And including them in ways that make them feel included. And this is something that your own kids experienced, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, I mean, children are called upon to participate in the stampede. They're not just kind of side notes, right? They're included in the performances. But also adults are as well, right? There are some in American culture, sometimes there's like Disney movies that are aimed at children, and they say, we promise you there's something for adults, but generally not, right? And brands and things are genuinely attractive to senior citizens, millennial couples like the caller in, children. They really do make an effort to attract all ages.
Mm-hmm. How do the faith and flag parts come together in the entertainment that is offered there? I know that not all of it exists the same way that it did, and your book includes an extensive appendix of mm-hmm. all of the shows, I think, starting from 1959 mm-hmm, to 2000. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so how do faith and flag come together concretely?
Mm. Yes, so in many of the shows, faith and flag come together concretely in kind of concluding numbers that combine faith and flag, like singing songs like God Bless America, right? And the audience is invited to stand up and participate at that point. Almost every variety show includes gospel numbers and also includes tribute to the military. And almost every variety show there that I have been to or seen on VHS, at a certain point, members of the audience who served in the military stand up and receive applause. I've never seen that at any other theater across the country, mm-hmm. right? And it's a kind of a now it was brought into Branson by Anita Bryant in the early 1990s in her show, in which she honored all the different branches in the military, and that has since become a staple. Mm-hmm. The flag part had, you know, did start to become more prominent starting in the 1990s, but from the beginning, from 1959, faith, particularly Christian faith, was a staple of the Branson variety show. Mm-hmm.
We have David calling from Crawford County. David, welcome.
Hey, thank you. I'm going to rewind maybe a dozen years to a film I saw in the St. Louis International Film Festival. I know it just concluded. So this was about the off-season in Branson. And I'm sorry, I don't remember the name of the film.
Was it We Always Lie to Strangers?
You know, of course, my question was going to be, are you familiar with that? And it sounds like you are. So, yeah, it's clearly dated. You know, it probably represents Branson maybe 15 years ago. So if you want to discuss the off season. That would be interesting. Thanks.
Yeah, if it's the film I'm thinking of, it's a documentary called We Always Lie to Strangers, and it kind of documents the backstage lives of performers in Branson and, you know, how this is a hustle. It's a struggle to make it in the entertainment industry, in the theater industry, no matter where you are. And that's true in Branson also. You know, you have to get people in the seats. You have to make a show that's different from the other shows, but also in line with what people might expect in Branson. So you have to be unique and recognizable at the same time. That film documented the backstage struggles, and it had a mixed reaction in Branson. Some people were fine with it. Other people felt that it peeled back the curtain too much because performers in it curse, or they don't necessarily show the most upstanding lives, right, according to Branson values. For me, that just shows that they are human,
right?
There are humans with the everyday struggles that we all have. But if you're promoting a specific brand of wholesomeness and family friendliness, then, you know, having someone curse or do something like that can kind of feel like it's sullying the brand. So there was a mixed reaction to that film.
Mm-hmm. How about reaction to your book so far, Joanna?
Well, there has been both positive and some negative reaction. Some people feel that I'm politicizing art, and my response to that is there's a quote by the famed kind of intellectual W.E.B. Du Bois: "All art is propaganda and ever must be, despite the wailing of the purists," by which he means all art reflects values, right? Reflects what we think is beautiful, what we think is normal, what we think is meaningful or important. So even for shows that are not, you know, actively championing a particular political candidate, right? I'm not saying the shows are political in that way, where they are electioneering or campaigning, but that I reveal kind of what kinds of values and meanings and messages are transmitted through Branson shows, and moments when faith, family, and flag really welcome in a community, and moments when those terms can be very divisive and exclude people.
Mm-hmm. The feeling that I got and what attracted me to this is that it's very easy to make assumptions that faith, family, and flag mean the same thing to all people, mm-hmm. including in Branson. And in your book, that is not the case, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's kind of the central tension of the book, right? For there are some people for whom faith, family, and flag are universal values that are pre-political, right? That these are values of human beings. And for others, they take up the mantle of that faith, family, and flag, faith, family, and freedom kind of trifecta that has been a part of conservative political campaigns since the 1980s, and see it as a particular vision of America that is exclusive to others. So that's kind of the dilemma. And yeah, there are different people in Branson feel different ways.
Mm-hmm. And in the end of the book, one of the final chapters is about future. We're taking a lot of a look back through this book. What does the future of Branson look like to some of the people that you spoke with who not just visit there, that is where they make their life?
Mm-hmm. Some people feel that the live entertainment industry is going to kind of disappear or decline dramatically as the family-friendly attractions of the aquarium and go-karts and mini golf kind of take precedence. And there are a lot of people now who visit Branson and just go to the resorts. They don't go to see shows. But for other people, they still really believe in the power of theater. And I felt that quite compelling. And they believed in the power of theater to change people's lives, to kind of make the world a better place. So I see live theater in Branson's future. To what extent it plays a major role in the tourism industry is up for debate.
Mm-hmm. Will you be going for Christmas?
I don't know if I'll be going for this Christmas, but I do plan to go back bring my children.
Mm-hmm. Joanna D. Das is a Missouri native, WashU Performing Arts professor, and the author of the new book, Faith, Family, and Flag: Branson Entertainment and the Idea of America. Joanna, thank you so much for joining us today, and congratulations on the book.
Thank you so much for having me.
This episode was produced by Elaine Cha.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Doerr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.